them to drop the bomb.
Yeah. Drop the bomb.
Drop the bomb.
Drop the bomb.
We gonna drop the bomb.
Drop the bomb.
We gonna drop the bomb.
Drop the bomb.
We come to drop the bomb.
This is a journey into sound. A journey which along the way will bring to you new color, new dimension, new values, and a new experience.
People know him as the digital lifestyle expert on NBC's Today Show, CNN, NPR, Fuse, and more. They've watched him on Steve Harvey, Inside Edition, Dr. Oz, and other popular talk shows and news programs. In recent years, Mario has become an even greater pop cultural presence as host of multiple events and shows, including filling in for Carson Daly in the Today Show, Orange Room, and hosting an event with judges from the popular TV show Shark Tank, one of my favorite shows. Mario has now launched his own interactive talk show, the Emmy Award-winning Never Settle Show. This is the world's first crowd-produced live stream talk show with live participants from the in-studio and online audience. People recognize Mario because he's a celebrity, but they connect with him because he's like a friend. He's smart. He's cool. He got that good curly hair. He's approachable. You remember curly? That curly hair was in style, man. Back then. But he ain't light-skinned or light-skinned,
no,
you know.
Never had that Albie Shore.
Never got that.
Never got that Albie Shore moment.
Why is Mario so engaging and inspiring? What makes him different than so many other personalities? Lots of things, for sure. He's down-to-earth approach, his passion for helping people, his undeniable lust for life. But more than anything else, it's because he lives, breathes his own philosophy every single day. He's proof that the right attitude, the right perspective, and the right tools can help anyone live their best life by making the most of their passions and their purpose. I would like to welcome my man to the show. This brother goes so far back. He and my wife used to work at the popcorn stand at the movie theater in Baltimore, Maryland. Welcome to the show and congratulations on the Emmy. It was so amazing to watch you receive this Emmy. I'm excited about what God and everything is happening in your life, brother, because I remember before we go to this clip, you being in my house, you and Rain Pryor and Michelle, you know, you talking about what you were going to do, you making a difference, and you really speaking things into existence. Mm. And so before we start off the show, man, I wanna show you the clip from you receiving this Emmy, and then I want to get your reaction.
Okay. We find out the winner of category 87, which is interactivity, and the Emmy goes to Mario Armstrong.
Everybody, get up. Who's up here? Get up here, Josh, Anna, get your tails up here. Everybody, get up here. This is amazing. 10 years ago, I was flat broke along with my business partner and wife, Nicole. Where's Nicole? Nicole's right here waving. We were both raising our child, pursuing a dream. We cleaned up our debt, got out of that, and then decided while we were getting a bunch of no's for this idea of doing a talk show that could be interactive, creative, positive, empowering, and really help people and make it really interactive and exciting at the same time, and being told no by so many networks, for us to be up on this stage from just season one with this great team that made this show amazing. Don't let anyone hold the destiny of your dreams. Don't let anyone ever doubt your ability, your chances. Don't let anyone say you don't have the skills, the access, the network, the resources, the money, because proof is in the pudding. If you work hard, be humble, and deliver your passion, you will get results that will create like this. You guys, the ball. Never settle show.
What was it like when they called your name?
All right. You work, and people that are listening to this podcast, they're workers. These are your listeners are doers. They want to have an impact. They want to have a service. They want to have legacy. So they're coming to you for the knowledge that you're sharing, but also that your guests and experiences that they're sharing so that they can soak some of that up. So I think it's important, before I say what my reaction was, to just understand the context of what a 10-year run feels like. And then to go broke during that 10-year run with being in business with your wife, your significant other is your only business partner that is invested into this thing full time with their own money. So no other income has an opportunity of getting in here because we both went all in on this while trying to raise our son. So I think when you look at how many times we tried different pilots for different ideas and got told no, how many auditions I went to and was told no, how many different times we got back up, and then at some point, you know, the universe and God and our spirituality, it all just kind of came and was like, look, here's what you've been working on, I've been making this tough for you, because the show you're going to launch is called The Never Settle Show. So I needed you to be able to prove that you and your wife, Nicole, would not settle and wouldn't give up. I didn't know that at the time. So you take this 10-year run and of trying to make your dream happen. And it takes different shapes and forms and sizes, and it evolves. But when we decided to do this talk show, it took us 2 years to get the show off the ground. And the networks told us no, even though I was already on the Today Show. Even though I was already at the top of my game, I was on Steve Harvey, I'm on Rachel Ray, I'm on Dr. Oz. I'm like, what else can I do? Oh, well, we need to see that you can actually host. Okay. I'm hitting 5-6 million of people a day on Today Show, and you're telling me you still need to see some kind of reel. I was hosting SiriusXM for years. I did WEAA in Baltimore for years. I did NPR. I did all these things that I've already hosted. What are you talking about? So then we said, all right, forget it. We'll fund our own pilot. So we put on credit cards, our own pilot, and did that. Then we were like, okay, now what? And then I'm like, well, now what we need to do is try to get you more exposed on other shows as this type of expert as opposed. And I was just like, man, this is going to be going on forever. So at a certain point, Nicole and I realized we have to dig in and do this ourselves. How do we cut out the middle person? And how do we find other avenues to go direct? And so when that happened, that's when we turned this thing on. And I said at the beginning of this journey, I said, look, if we do a show that I feel in my heart is what we're trying to make, which is about giving people full access, transparency, great guests, but advice on how to push their passions and be more successful pursuing their passions, that we can only do something good. Like if our intent starts there with just delivering the best, reality was off the chain at the time, negativity, this is even before Trump era, so this lots of negativity was already happening. So we were like, we're going to be the one show that's going to try to like swing the pendulum the other way and show that you can have an inspiring show that's still entertaining. So you take all that energy and all of what I just said into finding out that you were nominated to win an Emmy for something that people told you you weren't going to be able to do. I mean, these execs, if they said yes, some of the execs, I won't name them, but some of these execs, if they green light our idea, dude, I was the next Steve Harvey. These were people that they hold that key. If they said, yes, we're going to start to work around you and build around you, I'd be on every market on a major network.
But that wasn't your path. It just showed you had to take another path.
Yeah. You don't know that. It's duality, right? It could have been the worst. It could have been the best thing that I thought would have happened to me, or it could be the worst thing that could have happened to me. They could have kept me in a box. They could have controlled me, maybe screwed up the message, completely changed it into something that it wasn't, and I'm stuck now. So, you know, we live in this duality of like yin and yang. So at the time, I did not know that that was a good thing for them to say no. But after seeing us get the Emmy, it was a great thing for them to say no, because we went solo, independently. And at that moment, walking up to that stage, what happened was, quick story on this. The woman made the announcement. What you don't see before that piece, you do not see her say someone else's name.
Yeah, I think it was almost like a Steve Harvey moment. I think I saw that she jacked. She said, now we have the real person. I'm like, man, how they going to put the brother out here like that, man?
Well, we were all at the table like, that's not even somebody in our category. What is going on right now? What's happening?
Like they named a random person.
They named a random person from a previous category. So they missed a step in between. So once we realized.
So at that moment, did you like, am I being punked? Like, I know you didn't bring me this far to then have a mishap.
Because I was looking at the slide on the screen and I knew who we were up against. And I was like, that name is not there. So I knew something else.
Yeah, the tech guy was watching the technology.
Something else, right. I was like, something else is going on. Or I'm about to get up on the stage and find out.
So you were going to do an ODB joint, man.
B-more was going to be in the house that day.
Walk up on the stage just to show your suit off.
I wore this for nothing. Got all these silver Adidas for nothing.
You remember when ODB did that, man? He had the red suit on. He said, Wu-Tang love the kids. He just walked up on the stage, man. But I know you, I love that you're an intellectual, but you still got that Baltimore griminess and hood
in you.
So there was a mishap, and then what happened after that?
It was a mishap. So then they come back on, they explain that it was a mishap, and then they re-announce the category all over again. And so we're sitting there now on double pins and needles, and I'm looking at the jumbo screen because we're way in the back, and I'm looking at the jumbo screen. And I'm looking for her lips. Dude, I was so fixated on her lips. Cause the word Mario forces, you gotta button your lips together. So I was like, if she buttons her lips at the top of what she's gonna say.
So all this was going on inside your head.
All this going on inside my head. Meanwhile, I'm sweating in my palms cause I'm like, I didn't write anything to say. And I said to my senior producer, Adrian, who was sitting beside me, and she was like, you didn't write anything? And I was like, no. She says, well, you know, you just talk from your heart and everything will be fine. I was like, you know what? You're right. I said, but they've been rushing people off stage. I want to make sure that I talk pretty succinctly from the heart. So I just wrote down a couple of quick notes, and because I did not want to create a level of expectation. I've learned over maturity now that attachment is deadly, and that if you get attached to certain outcomes, you are going to live a more miserable life.
That's a great Buddhist principle. That's a principle. That's a Christian principle. And I think quite often we do get caught up with attachment. And then we get disappointed.
I was so attached. My family came into New York. Everybody came in. We got hotel rooms. I had a videographer. We had a suite where my mom, my aunts, and my wife's side of family, they're getting hair and makeup done. We got a hairstylist, a makeup artist, like all in this hotel. And I'm saying, I went into the room and I said, oh, what if we don't win? Like, we got all these people here. And what if we? So I started creating this negative spiral of like, I was not being present. I was like, dude, you already won because everybody is here that
isn't
matters.
It interesting that we have to sort of remind ourselves, because you've already gone against the grain. You know, these people who watched you, you know, to grow into this icon that you are in this tech world, who still was like, but you know, we're going to give them a second look. And you said, I'm going to doubt, you know, they're doubting me and I'm still going to keep pushing. But isn't it interesting that we get to that point in our life that we're already there and you've already overcome these obstacles? It's just like looking over your shoulder and say, you know, this shall too pass. And this is something minor because we've gotten you at this point. And for those listeners that are listening, we got to keep pushing on. And you've already celebrated the success because you did it your way.
Correct.
You did it your way. You didn't have to sign these deals
again.
And you hear that a lot in the industry,
so often,
where folks are then locked in and they like, wow, you know, I got to do what they want me to do.
I can't do anything.
So mama bought a good dress, bought her good shoes, put the good pantyhose on, man, and coming down there and her baby boy, she don't know what's about to happen. You know, she was going to be proud of you anyway.
And they don't care. That's the thing. They were so happy to be just in the moment that they were reminding me, dude, be in the moment. Yes. You are losing.
I say that all the time, man.
This memory.
Now that says a lot to you for a tech guy who's always on something to hear you say being in the moment, being present and being connected to what's around you. And that says a lot about you that I'm hearing you say that even you, this tech guy, mm-hmm. turns things off, that you have to sort of turn it off and then just release it to a higher power, the universe, or whatever we actually call it. Because again, in the end, we don't control anything.
No, we do not.
We don't control anything.
All we can control is how we react.
How we react to the
thing. We can't control what happens to us, what our upbringing was, the toxic relationship we found ourselves in, the toxic career we might be in, the fact that our dream isn't happening or our bank account doesn't really show the true value of what we feel we're really worth, or what our spirit is worth, or what our energy, or what our nonprofit's worth. Like, you can't control any of that. But what you can control is how you react to the situation.
So they called your name. You come on stage.
Dude.
And what's next?
They called the name. And the first thing out of my mouth was like, this was for the team. You'll see there's a different video on my Instagram page. It's like me just yelling like, this is for the team. This is for the team. And what I was reminding myself was, back in the beginning, and this goes to visualization and the laws of attraction. Because back at the beginning, before the show was even produced, I had told the team, I said, I had a yellow manila folder and I had a bunch of papers in there and I put it on the conference room table. And this is at Al Roker's offices. And I put it on a conference room table because Al Roker was one of the few that said, you do have something.
He believed in you.
And I believe in you. Yeah. However, I
at a time where they say black men don't look out for one another, Al Roker stepped out
up
and believed in you.
Yes. And he said, whatever I can do to help you be successful with this. And he did.
But even before Al Roker, you did the work. You said a visualization.
That's right.
you know, you put it out in the universe that this can happen, this will happen.
That's right.
And so he showed up. He was a, Al probably didn't even know he was going to be a part of this,
no.
but it could have been Al or anybody else, but there was somebody that was going to show up to walk you through this process.
And this is why, when I got there, I opened up the manila envelope and I put the thing on the table. And at the top of it, it said the Emmys. And it was like 30 pages thick. And it was the policy, guidelines, and procedure of how you actually submit for the Emmys. Mind you, we haven't had our first production meeting about who's going to be the first guest on the show. So I'm pulling this thing out. And I could see a couple of the faces kind of like twist up and look at me like they weren't necessarily doubting. Some of them said I read them wrong. Some of them said it was like, damn, this dude is ambitious.
Yes.
And I misread that they were like screwing up their face. Some were like, this dude's a little crazy. He thinks he's drinking too much of his own Kool-Aid. And maybe I was, but that's fine. When you're trying to do something audacious, you need to have a healthy dose of that, but also be humble enough and be open enough to hear what other people have to say. So you're not stuck on your one vision one way. Because I've seen ego kill more ideas, companies, projects, and relationships than anything else. And so when you can remove yourself from the situation and allow yourself to be open, you can take in that input, whether it's negative or positive, and then filter it the way you need to. In that moment, I opened it up and I said, I'm showing you guys what the policy and procedure is for the Emmys because I just want you to know this is where I intend to take this dream. And I want all of you to win off of this. How many of you in this room have an Emmy? No hands go up. So I was like, all right, so everybody's got skin on this then, right? Like everybody has an opportunity here to get some value if I'm right. And sure enough, man, when she called our name, I was like, this is for the team. This is for the team.
Wu-Tang forever.
I was flashing back to all those moments. I was flashing back to that conference room. And then I start running up to the stage and that walk is such a long walk. And I get up there and I'm holding that glass podium and I got my two hands on it, man. And I've got this mic and I'm seeing a sea of people. And I'm just like, God, tell me what to say. Just tell me what to say. And I was like, respect the wife.
Yes.
Don't get caught up that this is some Mario moment. It's a team thing. So don't forget Miss Nicole. So number one, you hear me come out of the gate. You know, my wife and I were broke 10 years ago. Where's Nicole? She's back there waving. Like instantly, I'm like, yo.
And people need to hear that this is a team effort. That because when I see people and you interview a lot of folks, man, when they claim that they're self-made, I don't know anybody that's self-made at all.
It's not true. I mean,
we all have somebody that poured in us. So
it's not true.
That you acknowledge for those that are listening, your wife first. Because she was there. I've heard those stories, brother. You know, and you.
I know you.
I'm a creative person in our house, and I'm married to a person. And so the reality is when you're sitting in this space and you're creating and the lights are being turned off and they're knocking on your door and you're still believing.
Right.
It says a lot about who you are and where you are. So to acknowledge her first to say, yeah, we did this thing together.
It's critical because you're absolutely right. Nothing. Look. There's an old African proverb that goes, one of my favorites, right? It's you can go fast alone or you can go farther together.
Yes.
Like it just, once you realize that that is truth, that that is fact, and you can get outside of your ego and get outside of your self fulfilling world and recognize that your selfishness is actually holding back your greatness. Once you realize that there's a difference between understanding what your vision and your purpose is and then recognizing that your purpose is bigger than you, then it becomes easy to share the credibility. It becomes so much easier. It takes maturity. It takes maturity to get there because you worked so hard. You're like, I did this. I deserve that. I did it. And it's like, no, actually you did it. Because actually my mom was watching Christopher while I was taking those trips up to New York City.
And I think we forget about those individuals.
My godmother was paying for my train rides when I couldn't afford the train rides to New York. You know what I'm saying? Like we didn't have the money to do it. You know, it's like all of those things are absolutely the reason why we are.
And it's important for people to hear and see that because when I speak, people, you know, they introduce me with this great bio. And I said, the things that you won't see is that I was kicked out of school. Mm. The things you won't see, my mother put me out. I had to go live with my father. And so we think we want to see the things, but we don't want to see what we have to go through to get those things. So they see you with the Emmy that you're going to, you know, show us.
Yeah, let's do it now.
But they don't see the sacrifice, man. Look at this, man. Look at this, man. Who would ever thought a brown boy from Baltimore City would come back home and bring an Emmy? And it's interesting. I was just listening to a 1A. I love NPR's 1A. And they were just talking about The guy who created, he created this image after his wife. So speaking of wife, he created this, and they said that Emmy was spelled a different way.
It was.
At a different time.
It was.
I think Emmy meant camera.
It did.
And so I'm listening to Josh. You know, I did my homework, brother. But, you know, this guy who created, whose name I can't think of, he is paying homage to his wife. Yes. And to hear you say, the very first person I thanked was my wife, because we look at this Emmy, for those that are watching on Facebook Live, but we don't know the process and the and what you have to go through. I remember watching you zigzag all over the place. You and I had breakfast at One World, one of our favorite places, eating some vegan pancakes.
That's right, man.
And you weren't even, you were sharing an idea.
Right.
And the thing is, you were so emphatic about it that I started to believe, like, yo, you can really do this. Like, I'm like, yo, man. And that's the gift that the creator's given to me, is that I've been able to, people have said that you believe in so many people and you pull them into your dream that it becomes theirs. And then they take on ownership. So it's not Mario's show. It is the team's show.
That's right.
And then people then believe in it. Businesses are failing because it's the person at the top. They think it's all about them. They're making all this money.
That's right.
When Enron and all those other places fell apart, man, people who were making millions of dollars, if they weren't at the top, they lost all of that. And so to look at this Emmy right here, man, and so let's talk about the naysayers, man. I mean, you had to go through a lot. Now, do you, what do you think? What was the role in that, man? Do you think it was, do you think race? Do you think age? Do you think experience? Because you've done all these different things, man. CNN, NBC. I mean, you spoke outside in front of the KFC, brother. You've been at the crap games talking. You done talked all over the place,
right,
man.
You got
you got a hood resume and you got a resume that takes you to the owners of Time Warner. And they said, it's still not enough. How does that make you feel, man?
You know, this is a really great question, because when you start talking about ethnicity, socioeconomic status, when you start talking education, any of those things, and you start saying, you start that question with, what's wrong with me? When you ask that question, what's wrong with me? And when that moment clicks, two things happen. Either you realize it's them, not you, or you start to go down the spiral of negativity.
That blame game.
And you start thinking, you know, I don't have it. I don't have what it takes. I don't have it. I don't have this potential. Am I crazy? Why was I even trying to do this? And you allow the dream killers to actually enter inside. And so what I realized.
How do you shake those dream killers?
I didn't at first. And this is the only reason why I can recognize that that's what many people.
And sometimes the dream killers share our same DNA.
Yes. Well, in most cases, and this is what I found when I speak to young kids a lot, and this is where I need the parents to listen up and the caregivers to listen up, because in most cases, you dream kill without even knowing you're doing it. So you don't have, there's the obvious when the person in the household says, you can't do that. You don't have the skills. You don't have the upbringing, blah, blah. And that's obvious. You don't think I can become a famous artist, I'm going to show you otherwise. You don't think I can become a doctor, I'm going to show you otherwise. Like, that's kind of obvious. And I have tactics on how to deal with that. But the stuff that's not obvious is when you say small things to them. Well, baby, maybe you shouldn't spend so much time on that. You should spend some more time on this, because I think you're going to have a career in this.
Yeah, I call those, in my world, those are somewhat microaggressions sometimes.
Yes.
Or mini microaggressions.
Yes.
That exist.
But these are massive weights. They are micro moments.
They add up,
but
man.
They carry
to become
massive.
Macro.
Yes, yes. And so I think in that sense, the dream killers exist. Some by nature, they want to do that, and that's who they're going to be. Are they're negative as they are, and they're just not going to believe in you. You have to isolate them and move away from them. The ones that are in your family. So here's what I say is my rule of thumb. I normally go to people and I say, look, do you love me? If you're talking family or friends or relationship, do you love me? Okay, you do? You sure? I'm asking, do you love me? Okay, you do. All right. Since you love me, what I need you to do is just support what I'm trying to do. Let me find my way for a second here. I don't know all the answers, but I need you to not understand what I'm trying to do. I just need you to support me because you love me. There's a difference when you just say, do you love me? And I need you to support me just for, so then look the other way. So mom or dad or Uncle John, when you say, and you got to point out the example, when you say this thing, it hurts me. You got to let them know. It can't just be an argument. It can't just be a fight. You gotta get on a more emotional level and let them know that they're actually putting some pain in you. And if they said they love you, then damn it, what the hell are they going to do now?
Yeah, indeed. You know, I talked to Charnell Brown yesterday. I called her Kimberly the whole time. That's Kimberly Reese from A Different World. I'm like, girl, I'm going to keep calling you Kim because I know you as Kim. And she talked about when she was on Broadway doing Serafina, which is one of our favorite productions. Yes. She went to South Africa. And she said her producer or her manager would call her back and they would say they're looking for light-skinned roles. Dark-skinned girls aren't in. Because we talked about her getting A Different World, which think about A Different World. She came on that chocolate mocha skin.
Right.
Lit up the whole team because everybody else was somewhat different. Uh-huh. But she said as a kid, she said, okay, we're not in. I'll keep it moving. She said she never used her skin color as an excuse to fail. She said because her parents always told them that melanin in your skin, people want it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they really, really want it. So she said, I could never use that as an excuse.
Yeah.
And I think in many disparate communities, we use either race or gender or class as an excuse. And those things do exist.
Absolutely.
But when you keep putting that as in front of your mind, then you are going to fail. And then when you add what we call the ego, which some people say it calls edging God out, when you think it's about you, then you are going to fail. So to hear you say, man, these are the things, these are the very specific strategies that I actually use.
Right.
They may not work for you,
right.
But these are the things, you know, these are the things that worked for me because again, you are in a very fast moving world. Technology is changing every day. I'm sure quite often you're the only man of color that walked to the space. They probably look at you like, you know, is this cat Indian? Is he from the West Indies?
Right.
You know, is this cat a straight, you know, he used to be like red dot a feather, you know.
Anything but black.
Anything. Yeah. Anything.
Right. Right.
And so you are in those spaces and you sort of carry this torch of men of color raising a black boy as well, who's also an artist. And I'm sure it comes with a heavy, heavy weight. I'm just glad that you're there representing us in my absence because again, many of those folks that are in those industries, you know, going back to the film Get Out, which is a film I love. And let me just tell you, if you have not seen the new film that's coming out, I saw a screening. Sorry to bother you. I saw it in Chicago, brother. You got to check that out because, again, it's about us being in these places and somewhat selling ourselves out, man, for other people.
See, man, so let me touch on the thing that you said about race because I think this is so important, especially coming off the interview that you just had as well. Because a young black sister at Penn State, I was speaking at Penn State, did a keynote there. She asked me, I'm typically the only black female in the room. And I'm trying to navigate my way. Hold on, let me think of her exact question. She's like, I'm trying to navigate my way. And she said, and I feel like I don't talk or I don't do as much because I'm the only black woman in the room. And I said, first off, let me acknowledge that. I understand what you're talking about, that this is true. You are the only person in the room of color, so that's a fact. Now, how you deal with how you enter into that space is completely different. And it goes to your point. There's something that I've learned called the reticular activating system, the RAS. This is a small bundle of neurons at the back of your brainstem, about the size of your index finger. And what it does is it filters out, or it filters for really the information that's most necessary for you to receive. So it's the reason why if you imagine being in a crowded space or a crowded environment and someone from across the room says your name, but they don't have to yell it. They just say your name. And you're like, did someone just say Lamar? Your mind subconsciously, that's the RAS filtering all these horns, noises, all this sound pollution. And you can still hear someone say your name from across the room quietly. Or it's the same reason why you say, I want to go out and get this new car, and it's a black Acura, and all of a sudden, all you see are black Acuras.
Yes.
That's all you see. So this is to your point of like, when you say, oh, it's because I'm black. Oh, it's because I'm female. Oh, it's because I don't have money. And you say that over and over and over again, your brain subconsciously is now filtering to look for only opportunities that you feel are going to be right with in line with you saying, that's because I'm black.
And I was just reading a book last night, Prometheus Rising, man. It's sort of talks about that. Like, I bought a white car, and all of a sudden I'm seeing white cars. They were already there.
They were already there.
But I'm putting my attention on that. And so many, many times in our communities, in many disparate communities, we think of lack. And yes. So that's what we expect.
That's right.
And so even though we try to articulate, I want to do this, but in the back of my mind, I said, but they're not going to let me. You're going to get, they're not going to let me. Think about that. You're not getting
it. And then you say, I knew it.
But then you say, I knew. But then you're saying, I want to be at the best. I want to be the best. I want to be at the top. But they're not going to let me. They're not going to let me. I was on a plane with a guy, and he's a photographer. I said, so you're a photographer? He said, yeah. I said, do you enjoy? He said, yeah. I said, but I'm not going to make a lot of money doing this. I said, yeah, with that type of attitude. So we think the universe is that powerful, man.
It is.
You got to be very, very clear on what you want.
This goes back to the Emmy. Before I had the show, I did the work, and then I sat down with the team and said, we're going to fill out this paperwork.
That's amazing.
And so that is the law of attraction, putting it out there. The reason why I feel so much pain for a lot of my brothers and sisters is because really what this boils down to, man, look, and you know better than I, because you work harder at this stuff than I do. You work so much harder at social justice and criminalization and all these other areas that are systemic in our lives and in our culture. But at the end of the day, if we really can try to believe some sliver of hope that Mario was saying, how we react to things does really matter. That there is a chance that if I start talking more positive about the things I want, that I might actually attract that to me. That if I start moving myself away from a few negative people, that I might actually start connecting to more positive people.
I said that yesterday to Charnell Brown, man. I was a huge Different World fan. I mean,
who was
I'm sitting in there and I said to her, who would have ever thought that I would be interviewing you?
Right.
You know, interviewing a woman who I watched when I was in college, watching the stories and all these other characters, Whitley, Dwayne, Wayne, and who we love. I said, but I put it out there. I said, this is what I want to do, but I want to do it differently. So when we created, you know, along with my producer, Darius, we created Sound Bombing. Bomb is about healing.
Right.
Not a B-O-M-B, but it's about healing. It's about bringing some healing back to the communities because again, many people talk negative to themselves.
Yes.
Indy Irie said it this way. She says, the words that come out your mouth, you're the first to hear. I mean, think about that.
That's brilliant.
The words that come out your mouth. And then she goes a little further and she says that ugly duckling has grown up to be a swan because she struggled with her image. She struggled with her complexion, her hair. But she says, I would die with all the lies that you said to me. But the beautiful part is it ended by saying, that ugly duckling has grown up to become a swan.
Yeah.
See, we look at all these, she's a Grammy Award winning artist.
Right.
But we don't know the process of what people go through. We want those things, those tangible things that can easily be taken away. But we don't want to do the work. People don't know that you up early in the morning, that you late at night,
right.
That you got to get your son this, you got to do this for your wife, you got to still be a husband because you guys about to celebrate an anniversary. You still got to do those things. And you still got to be on when you get on TV on the way in. We don't know what happened. We don't know what call. Like I tell people, and I want to hear. I want to hear what you have to do. We don't know what call you got before. And I tell folks, I love Jim Quick, man. I love Jim Quick's where he talks about his routines and he says we are reactionary. He says so when you wake up, the very first thing you do in the morning, if you check your cell phone and you check your Facebook page, you check your stock. You're going to be reactionary.
Yep.
And so let us hear from you, Mario. What are your routines in the morning? What do you do normally when you wake up and then throughout the day? Because again, what I've discovered from reading magazines like Inc. and Fast Company and Mindfulness Meditation Magazine, the most productive people, I don't call them successful because, you know, success can mean a lot of things but the most productive people have routines.
Yes.
What are some of your routines?
So mine's a little bit more sporadic than most because I don't prescribe to the idea that everybody should wake up early.
I know, man. If you ain't a morning person, brother.
If you're not a morning person, you're not a morning person. So what you really need to be doing is you need to be taking an assessment. So the first thing that people need to do and the first thing I did is when do I feel consistently that I'm at my peak in terms of my mentality? When is my mind awake the most? What are the hours of the day? What happens? What's going on? So once you figure that out, then you start to map around the hardest stuff for you to accomplish or to do. You plug in to when you can have the best opportunity to tackle it. So that's number one. Number two, transitions. Before I even came into here, when I was getting out of the car on my initial walkover, I had transitioned because I had just gotten on off the phone with someone talking to someone on the Today Show because I got to be on there on Tuesday. And I was like, okay, my mind is still thinking about this Today Show stuff. I said, no, you're going into Lamar's podcast. You need to now be focused on how you're going to deliver a message that can help people or be more present and aware with his questions. And like, how visualize that for a moment. And these are quick. Mm-hmm. When I pull up to the house, I don't pull up to the house and just go in the house right away. I pull up to the house and I stop. And I'm talking 15 seconds. Three breaths, just breathe. I want to go in the house. I'm about to see my wife and my kid. Not, hey, honey, I'm home. You know, my day was crappy. You know what I mean? Or, you know, you're just rushing right on in. It's like you just savor everything better. So now when she looks at me and I see that smile, for whatever reason, it just meant that much more to me. Only because I just took a moment to transition. So transitions throughout the day. I'm talking even from project to project. You're working on email now, and then you got to jump over to creating your presentation. Take a 2-minute transition break.
Yeah, that breather is important.
Because what it does is it relaxes the brain. And what people aren't understanding is it's not that you're physically tired. You're more mentally tired than you typically are physically tired. So if you can take more breaks throughout the day for your brain, which doesn't need a lot of time. So if you could just take a step outside or just a walk to the cooler or just a step up and stretch and then just say, okay, I'm releasing that moment, going into this new moment. When you get into a routine of that, it starts to happen automatically.
It becomes a habit. You know, again, you're talking about a habit.
I'm still not great at that, but I've gotten much better and I've seen the improvements from that. I've seen massive improvements from meditation, and being able to practice meditating has been massive.
Yeah, I am a huge meditator, beginning, the end of the day, because you have to decompress from all mm-hmm. the baggage from not only your personal family, but people pulling on you, asking for stuff and things of that. And I always tell folks, when you go to the meditation mat, if you're sleepy, don't go to the mat because you're going to fall asleep. Meditation and mindfulness is not about falling asleep. It's about being.
Yes.
You're not going to get an expectation. It's not, it's not dress rehearsal either.
Right.
You're not going to meditation.
I tried meditation and all I see is ideas. Okay. You're actually in the present. You're actually meditating.
Indeed.
Stop. Just see them and move on from them.
And don't judge the thought. So, right. But you do have a practice and prior to do you feel when you skip a step, what happens to you when you don't do some of those things?
I get thrown off. I get thrown off my routine. And so one thing, I also set aside time on my calendar for personal development. So there is a block of time every single day on my calendar for personal development. That means read. That means study. Whatever I need to take a course online, watch some TED Talks, read something about my industry. There is a moment every single day where I have dedicated to personal development. And I find that most people are kind of just like finding their way through. I'm going to get to some time to write that book, or I'm going to get to reading that book. It's like, no, schedule it and make it, even if it's 30 minutes, schedule it so that nobody can schedule into that time. So I think that part of my routine is, when I miss that, I feel it. When I don't have that personal development time, I feel it. I feel like I don't feel fulfilled. Mm-hmm. I feel like something missed out in that day. But my ultimate reset button, man, I've gone back home and re-showered. So my ultimate, like, if you have a bad day and your bad day starts off wrong, or if it's having a bad day, many people, unless you work for yourselves, maybe you can't do this. So in that case, you need to subscribe to the thought that it's a bad moment, not a bad day, because you can change how the rest of your day goes.
Say that again, man. A bad moment.
It's a bad moment.
Because, you know, we hit our toe in the morning. We curse everybody out on the way to the shower. We kick the dog. We smack our wife. It's time to get up. You know, our significant other. But again, I like that you said it's a bad moment. But that morning routine, how you get out the bed, breathing, taking a pause, thanking the creator. I tell my buddy Keith Brown always says it this way. He says, when you get out the bed in the morning, you put your left foot on the floor, your right foot on the floor, and you stand up, you start clapping, because that may be the only standing ovation that you may get all day, man. All day. So that's all you're going to get. Don't worry about anybody else.
My four things real quick is I wake up and I say, thank you, God, because I'm here. So the first thing I do is I say a quick prayer to thanking God that I'm awake and I'm alive.
Yes.
Second thing I do is I roll over, kiss the wife. Next thing I do is I say a small prayer real quick for all family members and people that are around my family to keep them healthy. And then I ask God specifically to use my energy for anyone that is seeking hope, that is feeling down, that is in a situation where they don't see another option. If any ounce of my body or energy can be used in the universe for that person, use it. Just take from me and use it. And then that usually ends my first prayer. Then I'll kiss my son. Kiss the dog. Love my dog, Cello. And then before I take a shower, I read the Daily Word. Read that. That's something that my mother-in-law gave me, and I love that. I love having that book every couple months when it comes with the new one. And then I go into the shower. And when I go into a shower, dude, I'm in my zone.
Yeah.
I got Aquanotes in my shower.
Yeah, because you know that's where your creative juices come, man. You know, I forgot the word that they use to sort of describe that feeling. There's a word that talks about the therapeutic piece of being in the shower. I mean, so many creative things have actually happened in the shower. Outside of making babies in the shower, we talking about other creative type of things, bro. But folks have written songs. Folks have written you know, TV shows. But there's a word that'll come to me later on in time. But I like the fact that that shower sort of wakes you. Tim Ferriss always talk about taking a cold shower. I ain't down with that, but you shock the body, man. So I don't know if I'm ready for that, man.
So while my out of body experience, I went to Necker Island, which is Richard Branson's island. So let's just understand that. Richard Branson has a private island.
Yes.
Okay. And I was one of like 25 people that were invited to go on this trip to Richard Branson's private island. So we're out on the island. He's got shower. This island is massive, by the way. It's like the Amazing Race all over the place. And he's got tennis courts and swimming pools and hot tubs and all this stuff. And he's got these outdoor showers. Most of them only do cold water. I was like, what is going on? And I found out that that's what he subscribes to. And I was like, ever since then, I actually started slowly reducing the heat in my shower. And I think it's done better for my skin and everything else. But it's hard. I still love a hot shower. Yeah. But at the end of my hot shower, it's funny you bring this up. I will take a cold moment in that hot shower. So I turn that shower water down and I get it to be cold. I will take it down gradually, but then it gets cold. And what you're challenged to do is to sit there and start to calm yourself. Yeah, your body starts to shiver. It starts to shake. It starts to tremble. You're like, this is ridiculous. It's crazy. I'm freezing. And your mind is just racing. And if you can just say, but I'm here. I'm good. Okay. Dude, that thing was the most powerful awakening thing for me.
And you bring in some basic things. I mean, you don't have to have a college degree to do this. No. I mean, you don't have to read all these other things. It's just the shower is very therapeutic. I've done the cold shower. It does shock the body. It brings your
heart rate up, too.
Because, man, I'm constantly studying individuals who are high-performing individuals. And these are some of the things that they suggest. I want to throw out another question out to you, man. Yeah. What's the one book that you normally give out as a gift? A book that you're constantly like, hey, read this book. Here's a book for you. You know, what's that one book that you're constantly giving out or you're constantly recommending?
That would probably be The Four Agreements.
Oh, man. Miguel Ruiz, man. Yes. Then there's another one called The Fifth Agreement.
Yeah.
Why do you give that book out so much?
It's an easy read.
Yes.
It's a smaller format of a book to carry, so you can take it with you, and it's an easy read. Number two, it clearly spells out how it's going to address these four agreements in a great story. And the four agreements are things that we all should be doing more in our lives and would give us more self-satisfaction and would make us even a better human being. So that's kind of one of my biggest things too is we've done this as a team, no assumptions.
Yes.
Assumptions kill dreams, indeed, man. This goes back to race and economics and all these things, these ideas, the self-inner critic, the self-sabotage of like assuming, okay, I'm black, I'm going into this space. Like, they're going to look at me this way. Well, did they say they're going to look at you that way? Or are you assuming they're going to look at you that way? Right? It's like, so deal with facts and understand a difference between assumptions and facts. Too often we allow assumptions. Oh, they would never write me back. I'm not going to reach out to them. I'm not going to, you know, if your wife, the comedian said, you know what? I've been on so many auditions. I'm not going to go on this next audition. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
I mean, you just that's not a fact. You got to go on the audition.
This life is a marathon, not a sprint, man.
Right, exactly. And so, it's just significant to have some kind of routine in your day and some type of routine that's going to work for you. And I think that's the most important takeaway. You know, I look at it as, first and foremost, young people and old people need to identify what their vision is. The reason why too many people are reactionary, the reason why too many people pick up the phone, they start their morning a different way, or they don't have clarity, or they don't have self-development on their calendar, is because they don't know what their DNA is meant to do while they're here. Yeah. They haven't figured out exactly what's their legacy or their impact or their service. The minute you can actually start to really reassess and really dig deeper as to what do I get enjoyment doing? And what am I great at? So I challenge people to write those things down. Write down on a blank sheet of paper, because you tell yourself you're not great at these things, but you're great at a lot of stuff.
And Farrah Gray asked another one. He said, what would you do for free? What would you do if you did not receive a check? And you and I love to talk. You know, we love to ask questions.
Yep.
And so, again, I think adding to those particular things. Now, in the intro, you're coined as a digital lifestyle expert.
Yeah.
Now, what does that actually mean? What is a digital lifestyle expert?
The interesting thing about this is, too, is that we're actually transitioning from this, which is a really great moment, because this is a good moment for people to listen up. If you've ever start to build a brand, or if you have received a title for a certain type of work, and now you're trying to move into a new area, which is a different title, people are used to boxing you in.
You get typecast.
You get typecast.
Charnel talked about it yesterday, being typecast for Kimberly Reese.
Yes.
Same thing.
Yes. So how do you do this? So for me, the digital lifestyle expert came about because I saw that on television there were too many tech experts, and they called them tech experts. And I'm like, well, I don't just see myself as a tech expert, because that means you got to, that's almost like being a generalist doctor. I should know a little bit about everything. I was like, there's too much of this tech stuff going on. I know a lot, but not a lot about everything. So I felt that, number one, I couldn't really fulfill that. But number two, more importantly, it wasn't good for me and my personal brand to be marketed just like any other tech expert. So I said, no. This is, first off, tech is too harsh. It's too rough. No, digital is soft.
Digital is, yeah.
Digital soft. You know, we can, and then lifestyle is even softer. So we came up with digital lifestyle expert because it's more about, how are you living in today's digital world? What are the trends? What are the things that are happening in our lives? How's our lifestyle impacted by this? And how can we use these tools to our advantage? And when we came up with digital lifestyle expert, we then trademarked it. And then I actually had to call a couple of people that were like peers in the business and be like, I'm sorry, you can't use that. Like, I coined that and you're using that. You can't do that. And they're like, what are you talking about? You coined it. And some of them were just like, my bad, Mario. You know, we had a good relationship. A couple of them were trying to like challenge me on it. I'm like, come on, man. Don't like me. I had to call.
Man, you took hood to another level, brother. Like, when you lawyered up, you're like, yo, I own that word, homeboy.
You can't use that.
That's dope, man.
That is registered copyright. Digital lifestyle expert is owned by Mario Armstrong. You cannot use that. So that was like our moment to say, this is how we're going to talk about technology. So when you see me doing my Instagram live videos, you don't hear me say anything really about tech that much. You hear me talking about inspiration, motivation, advice, personal development, personal growth. These are all things that I'm evolving into. Technology is just one facet of who I am. So now I'm transitioning from being known as the tech guy that was going hard on CNN and NPR and Sirius XM, and you saw me doing tech, to now being someone that knows tech, but has also moved into, how do you pursue your life better? How do you balance it better? How do you have better relationships? How do you remove toxicity from your life? How do you pursue that passion with greater effort and greater and better strategies and better formulas to help you reach those points faster? So I'm transitioning. So now people like the Today Show don't know what to do with me, because I was the tech expert. So unless I'm going to come on and talk about apps, and I got to deal with this on Tuesday, like I'm talking about it, but the first step that I had them do was change my lower third. The graphic for my name should no longer just read. You can put digital lifestyle expert on there if you want to, but it can't just read that. It also now has to say host of the Never Settle Show. Or creator of the Never Settle Show. It's got to start to see something else that I'm bringing to the table so that I can talk about never settling. And so now my comments, when you see me do my segment on the Today Show, I'm going to be talking about tech, but listen to the words. Listen to how I say, you'll probably hear the word passion get brought up. You'll probably hear the word pursue get brought up. You'll probably hear me talking about tech things, but in a way that's tapping into my new self, my evolving self of inspiration and motivation. And you're only going to be able to talk about it with this guy. So that's how that title
came out. Because you made technology somewhat sexy, man.
I tried.
I mean,
that's the thing.
Like, I'm sitting in the gym and I'm coming on because you're doing a live.
Yeah.
And I'm just sitting there, just wrapped up, finished reading my book, and I'm coming on just listening to you. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, how does dude get me on his show? I'm like, you're supposed to be on I'm interviewing you. You interviewing me. And I'm like, this dude is, I don't know what you did, and it worked, whatever it was. I was looking crazy. People was like, people probably like, man, what this dude just, he must really know him. He just put him right on,
put him on
the screen, man.
Put him right on.
And I really appreciated that.
Wasn't no hesitation.
I really appreciate that. So this is a part of the show we do. We call it the sound bombing super question. So I'm going to ask a variety of questions.
Okay.
Man. So the first one is, what's your favorite word?
Is this supposed to be rapid fire?
It can be. You can think about it, brother, okay. But don't go too deep. What's your favorite word?
All right. Perseverance.
Perseverance. Okay. What sound or noise do you love?
Cash register. Sorry.
Chee-chee. So what's your superpower? What's your superpower?
The favorite sound.
What's your favorite sound?
My favorite sound is hearing my wife or my son call my name.
Okay. What's your superpower?
My superpower is the ability to get back up.
Okay. What's one of the most worthwhile investments you've ever made?
In ourselves. Don't want to sound Kanye.
Yeah.
But when we literally laid out, and I'm thankful that we were able to lay out, but we literally laid out 8 credit cards on the table to finance the dream. We invested in ourselves. So I would say the biggest investment I've probably made thus far is probably.
What's your animal spirit?
Dog.
Dog. All right. Favorite, you in tech and you on, what's your favorite TV show and why?
Favorite TV show? Man, you would think I would have a quick answer for that, right? Favorite, favorite TV show of all time? Come on, man, these questions are
currently,
hard,
you're currently, okay. Like, don't go old school, good okay. times. Okay. We talk right, about right, current, right. current TV show favorite.
Current favorite TV show is probably, on Netflix, is probably, oh man.
So many to choose from, man.
Yeah, man. I'm going to have to pass this one, man. I can't believe I can't give you a quick answer, man.
So, what are you reading?
Right now, I'm reading Gandhi and, I'm sorry, the Dalai Lama and Archbishop
Desmond Tutu.
Desmond Tutu, thank you. I forget the name of the Book of Joy. I forget the name of the actual title of the book right now. That's one.
Yeah, they've been touring. They were touring again. Yeah, I saw the video again.
Another book that's about to be released is really, really good that I've been checking out. It's called Super Connector. It's all about how to become a better connector. So it's for all of those that haven't been able to seem like how to get the door open or how to network better. Super Connector is super strong. I like that one. And then I guess the other one that I picked up that would be a good one is probably Rise and Grind, Damon John.
Okay, and I know you've been hanging. How is it, man? Hanging out with the FUBU. I mean, you talking about we used to rock FUBU. Now you with Mr. FUBU, man. How is it hanging out with Damon John? Man?
Damon is one of the most. He doesn't get a lot of credit for how funny he is because he always seems so serious.
Yeah, on Shark Tank, this dude is serious,
playing.
Man.
He's not
this
playing.
Dude. I'm like, I'm afraid to come on that show,
right,
man.
Right. And he's super focused, but that's why. But this dude is one of the most fun loving types of guys to be around, and he truly it's just fun to be around his greatness because you get to see how he operates. And so I'm thankful that we've been able to do a partnership together, and that I'm also part of his public speaking group now. And that we got some other things planned for 2019. But watching his story and watching him grow and be in the rooms and in the spaces that he's in, at the level he's in, where he's the only dude of color in these spaces, and to watch him, you know, make moves through that has been just really eye-opening. Because you're right. You were like, yo, FUBU was like our joint.
Yeah.
Like, and now you're with the guy that was like responsible for that vision along with that team. And to just see how humble he is, but how focused this dude is really, really good.
So what are you listening to? I know today when I chimed into your live feed, you were pumping Ice Cube. So what were you playing on your way over here? Or what's in your headphones?
J. Cole.
J. Cole, love J. Cole. Any particular song?
Meditate.
Good song, man.
That joint where he's really talking to his friends. He etches out their names, but he's talking to his friends, and he's trying to tell them Meditate, not medicate. Man, that song. I mean, there's several songs on it that are jammed. That song.
So what's next for Mr. Mario Armstrong, man? What's next?
I mean, look, we want more of these Emmys, but more importantly, we want more people to be tuning into the show. So I think we're still on that, even though we have an Emmy that says the show has been validated by peers in the business, we haven't reached the mass audience that we need to reach. So I think while we're getting credentials on one side, it's very important for us to not get lost into what our big mission is. It's not to win awards. The big mission is to be able to give people transparency, advice, and strategies and formulas through interviews and segments on our television show that helps people take their passions to the next level. In some cases, even uncover what your passion really truly is so that you can get away from that thing that you've been thinking you're supposed to do and go do what you're really meant to go do and really tap into your greatness. And how do you do that? And so I think you touched on something that I think makes our show most different than any other show is we reveal the process. So we're looking to have guests like, you know, range from people like you to Serena Williams to other people that have made it, but are respectable, but are also relatable. These are icons that are relatable to us if we can have a discussion about their process. People don't know what the process is, much like what you talked about. They see the shiny things or the titles at the end, but they need to know, more importantly, what it takes. It's the small steps of consistency that people don't see, that you do behind closed doors, that create the outcomes that you then have. So in order to create greatness, you got to do small steps consistently well. So I just would want people to really tune in to catch me on Instagram, because I do a lot of giving there on Instagram at Mario Armstrong. And then to go to Facebook and type in Never Settle Show, like the page and follow it, and just get ready for us for season 3. Because when we come out, it's going to come like I'm trying to really push our stuff to the next level on what we're going to do.
Well, man, I was watching the show, and because I want to hear from you, out of all the guests that have come on the show, which one has just sort of just resonated with you? There was a scene where this brother who was on there, I think he had a shoe company.
Oh, man, you hit me right on the dude. I'm going right to him.
You start speaking life into him about his business.
Yeah.
And the brother just broke down in tears. I don't know his name, and I don't know what his product was.
Yeah.
But what's one of your favorite episodes, man, or guests you've had on the show? And that particular brother I'm talking about, what is he doing now with his business?
Yeah, so he was working a full-time job at Lord & Taylor, which he still has. But he also had his nonprofit on the side. He wants to do the nonprofit full-time. So his nonprofit is all about giving homeless people shoes. So it's From the Soul is the name of his organization. It's From the Soul, S-O-L-E. So he broke down on camera because, one, we were celebrating his greatness of getting up every day to want to help mankind and be a better human, like humans first. And then, two, because we had worked with FedEx as our sponsor for the show to give him a $1,000 check, because that was the best I could offer him. I was like trying to figure out how I could offer some of these people that were doing phenomenal things that maybe not getting national recognition for. What could we do? And so one was getting him exposure on the show, and then two, getting him this money so that he could actually use this money to actually help facilitate more of what he's out there doing. The beautiful thing about that, Lamar, and one of the things I love about you, man, is you allow us as men, especially as Black men, to deal with our emotions and be okay with doing that publicly.
Yeah.
Like allowing to see, you know, because grown men ain't supposed to cry.
Yeah, I was moving. He was a big dude, too.
Yeah, he is a big dude. This dude's like 6'2".
Big guy.
And, you know, and like, you know, you talk about man up and all this other stuff, and it's like, you know, let them go through their emotion. And to see a grown man be that connected and passionate about his thing and it really mean that much, that's what everybody got from that. The only other interview I think that was, not the only, but one of the other ones that clearly stand out, Jason Maiden. That dude was one of the first Black designers at Nike and was responsible for working on a lot of Jordans and all of that stuff. And when that dude came onto the set, I mean, he lit it on fire. The idea that you can work for someone, the idea that he stuck with me, that was always be an entrepreneur inside the company you work for.
Yes. And that says a lot. If you're working at Nike and he was there doing he was there during the Jordan years. Oh, wow. And he was still doing his own.
And this dude is only like, gotta be late 30s, early 40s.
Wow.
Because he got on his vision at like 10. Like he was grabbing his mom. He's from Chicago. Wow. He was grabbing his mom going into shoe stores and would sit in the corner of shoe stores till he got kicked out, just sketching shoes on his notepad in a Foot Locker somewhere in Chicago.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying? So that guy, I mean, but it's those types of stories that I think just hearing, because what we do is we pull their success points. We say, what worked? And then I push them. I challenge them. Well, yeah, but everybody says that.
You give them specific strategies. You got to go deeper. That's what people want. They want specific. Some folks, and it's not a quick fix, though. For those that are listening, it is not a quick fix to get to where you want. If you want something different, you got to do something different. And so listening, studying those successful people, watching them move throughout is very, very important. So to say that this young brother was sitting there sketching and you're pushing him, I like that you're bringing ordinary people onto the show with extraordinary stories.
Right.
They have these superpowers people didn't know that they had, and you are giving them an opportunity to come on the show to share those stories. And the reason why, again, using you as a model, because, man, it goes way back watching and observing you, and I wanted to create a platform where I can bring on people that I know, you know, bring on people who aren't afraid to say spirit. They don't have to say God, but you can hear it in their voice that they know that this work is bigger than them.
Right.
That they know that you're closest to creator when you're creating. You're the closest to the creator you're creating. And that's why you look up and I'm knocking on the door and say, Mario, it's time to go. You're like, well, I got here at 6 a.m. But like, yeah, but it's 6 p.m.
Right.
Because you're in your zone.
Right.
You're in that element. And that's what you're doing. You're allowing these people to come on. So how could people follow you again? Tell them the show site. And then how could someone become a guest if they want to be in the audience as well?
And on that point real quick, when I realized that I was really in my purpose and that I had really listened to God and the universe was when I realized I don't know what. When I realize I don't know what day of the week it is, I'm not rushing for the Fridays. I'm not looking for the weekends. I'm present and I'm doing my thing. I really sometimes forget what day of the week it is because I'm so in and so excited about what I'm working on. I lose all of that time and space. And so just to piggyback off your point, man, it was a powerful moment when you can get there, if you can get there, you know, to not have to care about what day of the week it is. Yes. And that's not a financial thing. I'm not trying to say that's a money thing. Mm-hmm. It's not about that. It's just I'm living in, obviously I know what day of the week it is, but I'm not, that doesn't come into my psyche about anything about what happens tomorrow, what happens yesterday. Every day is Monday to me.
Yes.
Every day is Monday. So anyway, to get with the show, hit me on Instagram at Mario Armstrong or go to neversettle.tv and sign up and join our mailing list. If you're on text and you would like to get text alerts from us, you can text us at 33222 and text the word never settle. Text the word never settle to 33222. But that's how you can get with us. And then, like I said earlier, make sure you jump on that Facebook page, go to Never Settle Show on Facebook and like that page and follow it. And then just be active. Get active. And then if you want to be a guest on the show, it's all in your pitch. My biggest formula for pitching is always ask people when you're going for your biggest ask, ask in threes. Ask for a low ask, a medium ask, and then your dream ask. But put them all together in one pitch because you're trying to increase your opportunities of getting a yes. All you want is one yes. So if it's just a 5-minute conversation and that's your least path of resistance, your smallest ask, but your dream ask is, Mario, I want to be on your show. Put it in so I can see which one of these things can make the most sense with your pitch that I can actually deliver on. And I've seen this work phenomenally well for me. So I would just say pitch me, but pitch me in threes and be very clear about what you can deliver for our audience.
I like the three ask, but the fourth ask is don't be an ass if you don't get accepted on the show.
Because
you got the three, but don't be an ass if you don't get accepted on
this
the show.
This gets into desperation and frustration. The problem you think you, the reason why you would be like become an ass about it is because you're not asking enough companies or enough media properties to be a guest. So don't just, in other words, you don't go to one person and ask for a job. When you go out to find a job, you go try to find 20 opportunities.
Well, you talked about that today on your show. You you talked about the leads. You know, about the leads and follow up. So
yeah, people get frustrated when they get a no, but it's mostly because they don't have another. They don't have anybody else yet to go to. If you have a list of 12 different people that you've lined up, and your first one is a no, you're like, all right, whatever. I got 11 more to go. It just bounces.
And that's preparing you for the next one. So
that's right.
So brother, I thank you. I know your schedule is busy. I know New York now claims you, man. I thank you for coming.
And they can never get the Baltimore out of me.
They can never get out of it. Man, thank you for bringing this great Emmy. I would like to thank my producer, Darius Wilmore, and Supremacy for our theme music and all of our listeners. And as always, believe that something wonderful is about to happen and that some people miss the message because they are too busy looking for the mess. Thanks for tuning in, and do something for someone else other than yourself today. This is your man, Dr. Lamar Darnell Shields, and you've been listening to Sound Bombing.
You just got bombed.